today, my visitor is Sister Marcienne Kirk. Sister Marcienne, a warm welcome at High RMI to our radio program.
Thank you very much. Thank you, High RMI.
Sister Marcienne is a Sister of Mercy and a trained teacher, and has always had a great passion, especially for history and English. She was teaching until 1990, when she was asked to work in the Mercy Archives of Auckland and to take over the responsibility of the archives, which are located in Ponsonby at St. Mary's Convent. Sister Marcienne is a real Aucklander. She was born and raised in Ellerslie and has an immense knowledge about the Auckland history. Sister Marcienne, you were trained as a teacher and you became an archivist. It must have been a big change for you to come from being together with pupils and then to be more or less on your own with books and documents in the archive. Did you perceive this change as a challenge?
Well, yes, it was a challenge, but in the archive work, you do meet a great number of people, so that although I would certainly say I miss the children, I love teaching, but there were many adults who came to do research for books, some of them came from university, they wanted to do something for theses, and people came particularly for family history. It's a very big interest in family history because the school is a very old one, and so the convent, they've been there since 1861, and there's a very great need, I think, today for young people to know something about their ancestors.
Can you give me some background about the Mercy Archives?
Well, archives, I think the best way to describe it is what one of the papal documents calls them, that archives are the footsteps of Christ in the world.
And footsteps of Christ in the world.
That's right, yes. And from the point of view where I work, most of my work is preserving what has come down to us from 1848 in New Zealand. That's a very short time as far as history goes, but as far as our history in Sisters of Mercy, that is when we would have started to keep records. The sisters actually came to Auckland in 1850, and since then there have been letters and documents and photographs, and all of these we have been able to preserve. I took over from other sisters before me. I didn't start the archives, but I was fortunate enough to have a big interest in them, although I'm not trained as an archivist, but my historical background gave me an advantage.
And you spent about more than 15 years in the archives, and you're still active there.
I am still active there, yes, yes.
And you're in your 80s.
Yes.
What feeds your passion for the archives?
Well, I think that it's important for us and for the younger people in our world today to know their past, because what happens if people, like governments for interest, don't know their history? They keep making the same mistakes. And I find that the young people that I come in contact with, they're mainly young girls and young women, they are very interested because so many of them don't seem to have grandparents these days. Now, I looked on my grandmother particularly as a great source of information and knowledge, and I feel that it's a shame that younger people perhaps don't have that opportunity to listen to the stories of the past. So our girls who come to see the history of their school, to look at perhaps uniforms of the past, to see what girls studied in the past, what they did for recreation, for sport, for examinations. And it's quite amazing sometimes the information that they find that I really wasn't there.
How can you imagine the work as an archivist?
How can I?
Yes. Can you tell me a little bit about how is the work as an archivist for the listeners who have never been in an archive? And
well, it's a certain amount of hard work. If somebody sends in, say, for instance, say your grandfather or great-grandfather has died and has left a great number of letters and photographs, and they have come into the archives. Well, the first job, of course, is to sort them, to put them into some sort of perhaps chronological order of their letters. to make sure you have the names of people and dates on the photographs. That's sometimes not always possible, but you do your best. And when you have sorted all your material, then you check it for whatever might be some damage. Sometimes things have been kept in boxes and they've been damaged by insects or by water. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can't remedy that damage and you just have to destroy the thing. But normally what comes in is something that we can preserve. So we have a system, we buy special boxes, they come from the National Archives, and they're specially waxed to prevent insect damage and water damage. And that's one of the big things in archives, to keep your documents or photographs or books or whatever you're working with, to keep them in a state where they are available for other people to have a look at. Once you've done that, you start to record your lists of what has come in, and to file. And filing is a big job because you have to arrange the code, whatever code you're working with. Each kind of material has a different code. Mind you, many archives follow patterns that they've developed themselves. I can only talk about what I have done in Mercy Archives, but I know perhaps if you went to National Archives, you would find a different kind of process. Different organisations just make their own arrangements. Mm-hmm. And the big thing is that you can find what you're looking for.
Definitely. For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or send me an email at muffintalk840@gmail.com. My visitor today is Sister Marcien Kirk. Sister Marcien has been the archivist of the Mercy history in Auckland for more than 15 years, and she is still active there. For Sister Marcien, the archives are not more than a collection of items of past times. In the archives, she meets lots of interesting people who do research for books or for family history, and she has the opportunity to connect young people to their roots, to lives, the past times. And she says archives are the footsteps of Christ in the world, and the main thing is to preserve what she gets for the archives, and this is done by special boxes to preserve it for the future. But the key issue is you have to know how to find things again. It's no use storing without knowing where it is, correct?
That's quite correct. Very important.
Sister Marcien, you've been the archivist for the Mercy history in Auckland. There's also the diocesan archive on the other side of the road from your archive. Is there a cooperation or exchange of information between the two archives?
Yes, there is a great amount of cooperation. And at one time I did some work there for a very short time. Yes, because very often people might ask me something about, shall I say, the history of a parish, or they might want baptismal records or marriage records. Now, I don't keep those because, as far as I'm concerned, we concentrate on the sisters and on the girls in our colleges and schools. We also have a very close connection, when it's necessary, with National Archives. They are very helpful and they'll always give information or advice, and especially when you're starting off on the process, they will come perhaps and give you material that you can use to help you organise when you're just starting out. Yes, there's a good deal of cooperation. The archives, it's a kind of a, no, I wouldn't say a club, but it's an organisation where we do get to know each other, and we do get help from each other. And I go off into the diocesan archives if perhaps my records are not complete. Mm-hmm. They may have something that will fill the gap for me.
It might be also the other way around.
That's right, yes.
Has the National Archives also contacted you for some information already?
Yes, they do, and particularly their big interest, of course, is mainly in the schools,
yeah.
in education policies, changes over the years, and many outstanding people, like outstanding pupils, or see, we've had very outstanding singers, for instance, like Dame Kirita Kanua, and sometimes inquiries perhaps are not complete, and they will ask us maybe for something else that we might be able to give them.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, there's a good deal of cooperation.
And whenever I talk to you, I can feel the passion that you have for your work as an archivist. I understand that you're not only collecting treasures, but you also have written books. There are two books that you wrote. The first book was called Remembering Your Mercy, Mother Mary Cecilia Maher and the First Sisters of Mercy in New Zealand, 1850 to 1880. And then you wrote a second book called Legacy, The Story of St. Mary's College, Auckland. And now you've written a third book. What is it about?
Well, I actually haven't written it. I have been able to help two other people who, because I don't have a good sight now, I have been able to work with two people who do have good sight and good recording skills. The story is, we've called it the Valley of Faith,
mm-hmm.
because it's about a little Maori settlement on the Hokianga. It's called Pawaranga, and our sisters went there as missionaries in 1927 to continue the work that had been done by Marist priests and Mill Hill priests earlier on, and indeed Bishop Pompallier himself, the first Catholic bishop of New Zealand, had an interest in the Hokianga area. So it has been a very old Catholic area, and we were very fortunate to possess in the archives quite a number of memoirs left by the early sisters. And the book really is, it's not a history, it doesn't claim to be a history, it's a collation of their memoirs, which we have connected with a small narrative. We have been able to use quite a number of photographs, which are very interesting too. So it really is a collection that endeavours to pass on to younger people. I hope some of our schools will be happy to read the book, to tell them the story of how the early missionaries worked in New Zealand, and particularly, I must say this, the thing that struck me when we were doing the research was the wonderful faith and the wonderful generosity of the Maori people towards the sisters who had very little to start with and were quite happy to share whatever they had themselves. That alone makes the book worthwhile, I think.
And the word history derives from the Greek word histor, which means inquiry or knowledge.
That's right.
I would rather connect it to the word story. To me, the history is made up of many stories.
Yes.
Were you able to connect many stories to your new book, The Valley of Faith?
Well, it's mainly the stories of how they developed the school,
yeah.
which was very small when they started, because so many Maori children were not able to have education because they were expected to work on their farms and help their parents, and sometimes there was quite a big problem with distances to travel.
Distances to schools?
Yes, and especially if the weather was as bad as it was this morning. The difficulty was that although many children wanted education, circumstances were often against them, and the sisters did their best. If the children couldn't come to the school, they would visit and go out. And you must remember that we're talking about a rural area with next to nothing in the line of roads. Most of the travel was actually done by river or horseback, and we do have some sisters who are very good on horses. The case of having to be to get to some of the outlying farms, particularly if they knew that somebody was sick,
yes.
or someone had a new baby and perhaps didn't have enough clothing and wanted to be visited and perhaps to talk to other women really about the situation that they were living in. So although the school, I suppose, was the main focus of the sisters' mission work, They were also very strong in the community. They went on to the marae. They were always very welcome on the marae for all the ceremonies that the Maori people held. And three of them at least spoke Maori fluently.
How many sisters were there in total?
Well, four of them went to start off with.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They didn't ever rise much because the school's always been small. The numbers I'm only making a wild guess here, but 50 would be quite about a normal, but sometimes it might fall below that. The trouble with places like Pōhoranga and the rural north, as many people know, is lack of employment. And young families with young children very often moved away to areas where the father or mother could get a position, a job, and consequently the family were to leave the area and maybe didn't come back until the children were well grown up. So that's always been a problem. The main occupations for the people there have been farming and fishing, but very often young families can't survive on that kind of occupation.
Mm.
So that has been a problem with the number in the schools.
So where did the idea of this new book come from?
The fact, I think, we had all these memoirs, and the two people, one sister, Sister Meta Padsey, and Mrs. Ryan, who would be my co-authors, we felt that we wanted our children, especially in our colleges and schools, to know more about an area that they probably had never visited and probably never would because it's quite remote, and to know about the wonderful faith of the people up there and the way that they had preserved their faith with great difficulties and the way that the sisters were able to help them. So I think that was the main motivation.
It may even help those who emigrated or who came to Auckland in the mid-1800s. Well, you said that young families often moved away to find a better position, better life, and maybe some of their descendants will now read the book.
Well, that's what I'm hoping, is we'll make sure that they get copies.
Yes.
And some of the descendants, yes, do live in Auckland. I know of a couple of families who have lived here for some years. Others have moved to places like Kaitaia, perhaps far south as Whangarei even. A lot depended on what occupation they could find.
Can you give me an example of one of the little stories?
I have to be a bit discreet here, I suppose.
You don't have to name anybody.
No. Well, when the sisters, the first sister who had the inspiration was a very talented young woman, Mother Josephine Kenny, and she was an Irish woman of great talent and a great artist in her own right, and I think this is true, it might just be a legend, but the story is that she said when she slept at night, she could hear a cuckoo calling. Now, I'm not too sure about a cuckoo, it might have been a moorbook, but anyway, she held this in her mind for quite a while, and for some reason came to think that the Maori people are calling me. And possibly at the back of her mind, there might have been the reason why the Sisters of Mercy came to Auckland in the first place. Bishop Pompallier, in the 1840s, had gone to Ireland to look for sisters to teach the Maori people. And at that particular time, by 1850, eight sisters responded and came to Auckland, and a Mother Cecilia, who is you mentioned her name in the first book that I wrote. But because of the remoteness of the settlement and because of land wars, the sisters had not done anything to carry out Mother Cecilia's vision. But by 1927, conditions were much better. Well, Mother Josephine had the idea that for some reason or other, our sisters must go north. So she asked different sisters, and four of them were appointed eventually to go up and work in the school that one of the Mill Hill fathers had already built. And the story took on from there. The story of the cuckoo Well, I think, as far as I know, it's still an authentic story, but it was certainly some sort of maybe spiritual connection with the people that Mother Josephine Kenny felt.
Yes.
And felt the need to answer, and the sisters were happy to help her answer that need. She went to Pāranga herself.
Yes.
Didn't. But she had other positions. She couldn't stay up there very long. But I think that's one of the stories that comes out in the book.
I'm looking forward to reading the book. And these memoirs that you mentioned, which are the ingredients of the book, are they all in the Mercy archives? And so can you have a look at the memoirs also?
Oh, yes, they're all collected there. Yes, we've had... Oh, we've had most of them, I would say, for the best part of... well, they go back. The very first sisters who wrote would have been possibly writing in the 1940s. And from then on, and it just depended. They didn't have a lot of time, of course, to write, because as well as teaching and visiting and cooking and keeping the house going and keeping vegetable garden going, because they needed that, they wouldn't have had a lot of time. Some of them didn't write until they retired and came back to Auckland, and then were asked perhaps to write up things from their memory.
I remember Dennis Horton was mentioning that one sister, I think Sister Philomena, who was on the book, on the boat from Ireland to New Zealand, and who wrote kind of diary.
Yes.
Is that still in the archives?
Oh, yes, that's it. We've got the original. It's a very fragile little homemade diary. The little pages are stitched together.
Oh, they're stitched together.
Yeah. In those early days, but this is not connected with Pāranga, of course.
Yeah.
She had nothing to do with Pāranga. But in those early days, the sisters used to, for reasons of economy, made their own ink and often made their own little books by collecting up paper and just stitching, where today you'd have a professional way of binding the books. They didn't have the money to do that.
So when you say they collected paper that was only printed or written on one side, and
yes,
then they were using the back.
We've got dozens of letters that are written down the page and then written across.
To save paper.
The money was a problem. They didn't have a lot of...
I've seen that for letters that were sent to Europe from New Zealand.
Yes.
Because they had to make sure that the letter wasn't too heavy, so they wrote on both sides.
That probably was one of the reasons, yes. Yes.
Did you also receive letters that the sisters may have written to their family members in Ireland?
We don't have any, no. The only... letters that came back were the letters that Mother Cecilia herself wrote back to Carlo, which was the convent she came from in Ireland. And the sisters, after her death, the sisters collected up what they had and sent them back to Auckland. It's highly probable we haven't got all her letters, because in the days of sailing ships, there was a lot of misadventures, and boats would sink, and probably we don't... But we have a very good collection, but there are gaps.
Mm-hmm. And you work together, certainly, also with the archives of the Mercy Sisters in Ireland.
Yes, yes. Well, I've been to Ireland twice, and I've been to her birthplace, Mother Cecilia's birthplace in Carlow, in Kilkenny, and I've been to the... what we call now the Mercy International Centre, which is in Bagot Street, Dublin, where the First Sisters of Mercy were founded by Mother Catherine McCauley. We've moved a long way from Pāranga.
Yes, that's very different from Pāranga, and then if you see Dublin. But I think that you still have to have that connection back to Ireland, where the sisters came from, and then they went to these rural areas.
Yeah, well, most of those early, or many, not all, but many of those early sisters would be Irish.
Yeah.
But they're also Australians and New Zealanders, of course.
Were there also Maori women in Pāranga, Maori Mercy Sisters?
One came from Pāranga, Sister Elizabeth Ehaka. The Maori people, and religious life is a different kind of experience for them, I think. She was Sister Elizabeth Ihaka was a very wonderful teacher, and she taught in many of the Auckland schools, but in her later life she asked if she could go back to her own people in Pauranga, and she lived there until she died, and she's buried there, and she's very greatly venerated by her people.
Mm-hmm. So you say that it doesn't fit in the culture so much, or what?
It doesn't. Well, as far as I'm no judge. I'm not a cultural expert, but we have had four sisters of Maori descent, but only one has made a permanent commitment.
It seems like the Mercy Archives are really a treasure. And can you help? Can you visit the Mercy Archives usually? Do you have to have an appointment?
It is best to have an appointment in case there's nobody there.
So there's not always somebody in the archives, but you can call the Sisters of Mercy.
Well, we're generally there between, say 10 o'clock and 3 o'clock anyway.
Yeah, okay. That's good to know. So if any one of our listeners would like to visit the Mercy Archives, you're welcome to do so.
They are,
Come to St. Mary's Convent in Ponsonby in New Street,
that's
Auckland.
Right.
Thank you very much, Sister Marcienne, for this interview and for all this information. It has been a pleasure and a privilege for me to have you here in the studio. Thank you very much for coming. And for those, you showed us a little bit more about history, and that history goes on to today. Archiving memories and items is such an important thing, because if you don't collect them today, you won't have anything left tomorrow and for the generations that come after us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.